This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Thanks to Tobes for the update. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. Brought to you by the law firm Cundori & Murad. Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. They do it all, and their attorneys are there to protect you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their team today at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you. Get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. Danny, tomorrow we're taking the show out and about with the people ahead of the Thursday night opener in the NFL. We're going to be at MGM National Harbor tomorrow and Tap Sports Bar.
Always love heading over there. Those guys know how to treat folks first class. It's a great spot, great location, great place to go watch games. We've done NCAA tournament rounds there, opened the end of the NFL. We've done appearances there. We know our way around that spot. Always wonderful to be over.
Yeah, I cannot wait for the season to start and just to be back out with people. We're going to be doing our field trips all season long. In fact, we've got announcements tomorrow on where our field trips will be. Although I think I can now tell people that we're kicking off week one in lieu of a Friday field trip.
Right.
Because we're going to be out on Thursday night. We are going to be at Pupatella Pizza in Leesburg this Monday. So Leesburg, we are coming your way. And in fact, we're going to double dip in Leesburg over a couple of straight Mondays. Because we've got Pupatella week one directly after the Commanders ideally beat the Giants this coming Sunday. That's coming up this Monday. And then on Friday, our series is going to continue with a Grant and Danny field trip back out to Leesburg. Details to follow. But just so you know, Virginia, you're on the clock first. Maryland's going to get their shot. D.C. is going to have opportunities. But let's have a little fun here. Let's see how Virginia shows out to get this thing going.
We had so much fun doing those things last year that, you know, it kind of became this no-brainer. We did some. Hey, let's fill them up. Let's see if we can do one each week. And then all of a sudden it became this thing. And now it's grown a little bit. So it's basically a traveling road show, a traveling party, pep rally, so to speak. This one will be different because it's after the game. Hopefully after, as you said, after a win, Monday morning quarterback style. But leading up to a fun weekend, because last year the team was fun. They were winning and everyone was having such a great time coming to see us. And there was this sense of relief and community. Ended up being the coolest experience, man. I can't wait to do it again.
You know what it's like, honestly, is a circus. If you took all of the circus acts out of the circus.
Mm-hmm.
So there are no people walking on tight ropes, right? There is nobody wrestling tigers. There are no animals. There's no cotton candy or lights or anything like that. We're not under a tent. But otherwise, it's a lot like a circus.
I see what you, yeah.
There's like no the circus, clowns or right. face painting right. or anybody who is like jumping on the ring of death or something.
There's no tightrope. If the circus was two guys talking.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
If the circus was a radio show.
Yeah.
Where two guys talked about sports.
Then they would talk.
And then they went to different cities on Fridays ahead of a football team playing a game to preview that matchup.
That's what it would be like.
It would be exactly like what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the Grant and Danny poll of the day right now is live, presented by Metropolitan Moving and Storage. Local, long distance, residential, commercial. 3 decades of best-in-class service and experience. Pretty simple question for you. Do you think Terry McLaurin will be on any type of a pitch count in week one against the Giants on Sunday? The reason for this question, and you can answer now, yes or no, our poll of the day presented by Metropolitan Moving and Storage, 106.7 The Fan Twitter account, is based on comments that he made to reporters this afternoon. This was about 40 minutes ago. John Keim of ESPN tweeted, Terry McLaurin, when asked if he felt he'd have to be on a snap count Sunday. Now, what you will not hear in this answer is the word no, okay? He did not say, be very, very easy to do that if he's not going to be on a snap count. Hey, do you think you're going to be on a snap count on Sunday? You could just say, no, I'm full go. No, I'm going to play every snap. No, I'm going to do what I normally do. Here's what he actually said. I feel I'm in great shape right now. I'm going to be communicative throughout this weekend and how I'm feeling Sunday, but as of right now, I feel really good to go, end quote. That is not, no. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to be on a 15-snap or 20-snap count, but I have said all along, I know a lot of people feel like he's just going to come back, be in great shape. Of course, he's in good shape. He could run on a treadmill for an hour, I'm sure. He could sprint for 30 minutes without stop, and he could run a marathon. Different than football shape.
Mm-hmm.
I have felt like he is absolutely going to be on some type of pitch count, especially because they have a short week and they play again on Thursday. So you can't run him out there and risk injury with 65 snaps, ideally, if they can get enough first downs and move the chains enough against the Giants, and then another 59, 65 snaps against the Packers. 130 snaps over a five-game span is completely unrealistic for a guy who didn't have a training camp or a preseason in any way. Now, you could say, okay, well, that's a lot of snaps. It might be 49 and 57. Still, if you want to add it up to about 100, let's say, which it's going to be more than that, that's not an ideal situation for a guy who just hasn't been on the grass or played any football, other than the last 12 days in very scaled back practices as they ramp up now for the start of the season. But Danny, he could have said, it would have ended this thing, and I'm ready to go. I'm full go. They don't have to worry about me. I'm going to play. It's like the hold out, the hold in never happened. I did not hear that in that answer.
Right, and I think that's because that's not what the answer is. Like, if he was 100%, now, again, I always hate this. We learned this distinction with Robert Griffin so many years ago, the difference between cleared and 100% and, you know, all those different things there in that scale.
He is healthy,
yeah,
for sure.
He's 100% healthy, and that's not what this is about. This is about, it would be foolish, quite frankly, to go, okay, treat him just like he'd been here the whole time. Because you're asking for a pulled muscle. You're asking for a strain. You're asking for something as a guy that's going to go compete at the highest level we've got, whether it's running a route, whether it's a block, whether it's, you know, doing everything that you have to do on a football play to make it successful. There's a reason that, as you said, guys that go jogging for extended periods of time don't just trot out to the NFL. It's a completely different kind of shape that you can't compared to, because you're not being hit. You're not doing all the different parts of recovery. You need time. People much smarter than me who have done this. Kadri Ismail was on with the Junks. Dan Orlovsky obviously didn't play receiver in the NFL, but he observed, he said, yeah, it's going to take a while. He's not going to be himself for a while, and it'd be stupid to expect him to, because you're now risking the season where you say, okay, go out full bore, you pull something, and now you don't have Terry McLaurin himself, not just for 1 week, but for five or six, and now it becomes kind of the story of the year. There's no reason to do it other than you'd love to have him out there at full speed, but you also have to be patient and judicious.
I also don't think teams and coaches think this way, but while the Giants game is added value, more important, worth two, so to speak, because it's a divisional foe, the week two matchup on Thursday night against the Packers is probably actually a more important matchup on paper going into the season with another fringe playoff wildcard caliber team. Now, again, teams don't view it that way. But I would bet, and a computer would tell you at a very, very high rate, that the result against the Packers on Thursday Night Football a week from tomorrow is actually going to matter way more to them than the result against the New York Giants in the opener, because of Green Bay being probably really good and the Giants probably not being that good. And I say that only to then say, I need Terry McLaurin available to go make a big catch for me on third down and to score a touchdown and to help put me over the top against a better opponent. I don't know if I can beat the Giants without Terry McLaurin, but I like my chances to be in that game at the end. With the Packers, who are theoretically better, I think I'm going to need all hands on deck. I'm going to need my horses. And so I can't have him go out there and give me everything he's got against the Giants, and then come Thursday, now I've got to be extra careful and he can only play 17 to 20 snaps or something. I need to work back from, how do I get a really good McLaurin against Green Bay on the road performance? Because if I could get to 2-0 through 10 days with two conference wins, including one in the division.
Huge deposit there.
I'm farting through silk. Like, that is gold.
So you start to think about, and actually I know that's antithetical or tough for old school folks to hear, that a division game might matter less, but think about the NFC and how crowded it is. Teams that they're going to be, again, just foreseeing and looking towards regular levels of prognostication, they're going to be competing directly with Green Bay, with Atlanta. They play, these are two of the teams they play in the first 4 weeks of the year. Chicago, potentially, in that really tough division. But the Seahawks, the Lions, the Vikings, that's before you get to any of these divisional games. So, yeah, the easiest path, just win your division. That's easier said than done, of course, when Philadelphia's really good, the defending champs, one of the best rosters in the sport, etc. The NFC's pretty crowded. Teams that they are, again, directly going to be competing with, your NFC record matters a lot. The head-to-head record's going to matter an awful lot. And again, Seattle may not be as good as they are, but they're playing in a potentially weaker division. So if Seattle does what they did last year, what they seem to do every year, win 9 or 10 games, how much more important is that Seattle game where you end up playing them? So there's actually some validity to what you're talking about.
I want to play a game a lot like Terry McLaurin playing a game against the Giants or the Packers. Darius, fire up the game show music. Here's the way this is going to work. We'll go round the horn here. We're going to see who can hit this one on the nose. I want to know. I've got the odds in front of me via Bet Online on who the most likely quarterbacks to be benched are this season. I'm going to go round the room, Danny, Toby, and Darius, and I'm going to see who you think is the first quarterback, the most likely quarterback to be benched first this season. So, Danny, you get the first shot at this draft. Quarterback to be benched.
First draft. Quarterback benched. I got some nominees in mind.
You don't want to help your opponents.
No, I know. I don't want to say them out loud. Show me Spencer Rattler.
Spencer Rattler is plus 250 to be the first quarterback benched.
Good answer. Good answer.
We'll take that. Toby, first quarterback to be benched this football season.
Inexplicably, I'm standing next to a Giants fan, so I'm going to say Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson, very good.
Good answer.
He is about plus 750 to be the first quarterback benched this season. He is in the top five, I will let you know. Darius, first quarterback to be benched this football season.
Whew. I'm going to go with one former New York Giant in Daniel Jones.
Oh, good answer.
Can't go wrong with Daniel Jones. He and Anthony Richardson were competing deep into training camp. Daniel Jones at 5-1 is in the top three. Among the most likely quarterbacks to be benched. Here is the order. Most likely QB is Spencer Rattler.
Here we go.
The New Orleans Saints.
Nice.
Joe Flacco, right?
That was the only
The Cleveland Browns. Then Daniel Jones of the Indianapolis Colts. J.J. McCarthy, Minnesota Vikings, which I find really interesting. In fact, that makes no sense. I think that's kind of a throw a guy out there that's unproven because they brought in Carson Wentz. That's their backup. And I wouldn't think they're in any rush to do that. And then you've got Russell Wilson going to Jackson Dart, who is going to be QB2 on their depth chart. Next up, Justin Fields and then Michael Penix. Of those names, what's interesting to you? I mean, the Saints won because Tyler Shuck
had
a good preseason, and because Rattler just hasn't played very well when he's gotten an opportunity, makes great sense. You know, Cleveland at least has guys that they're invested in from a youth standpoint, but I would think that would be later in the year. Jones, benching him, going to Richardson, I think you start the clock on being fired if you're Shane Steichen as soon as you do that. So I could see hesitation. And then, you know, the Giants, Wilson inevitably gets benched for Dart. But I don't think that happens in the first several games of the year. So it would be very, very surprising to me if that's the first one to happen.
The McCarthy one is the most interesting there because that's the one I don't see or understand.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the whole point is you're turning it over to this guy. So are you gonna bail on that? If he doesn't play well for a couple of games, is that it?
I think the logic is, let's say he has back-to-back awful games in a row.
Sure.
All right? I don't think this is going to happen for the record. I think he's going to play very solid because I think Kevin O'Connell is a great coach. They've got a great supporting cast. They got an awesome defense and running game. There's a lot that will help him out. But in the case of Minnesota, they start with the Bears on Monday Night Football, playing in Chicago, under the lights. That's not an easy environment. Then they've got the Falcons coming to town, and then the Bengals. Let's say through three games, he's got three touchdowns and four picks, and they're 0-3. That is a team that is built with playoff talent everywhere and probably outside of quarterback. You know, it's like a 13-win supporting cast on offense. It's a 12-win defense. It's a 14-win offensive coordinator and Kevin O'Connell. It's a 12-win defensive coordinator and Brian Flores. You're 0-3 with losses to Chicago, Atlanta, Cincinnati, and he's struggling. Do you kick the tires on a veteran? I would say no because the veteran's Carson Wentz. I mean, do they get on the phone with the Falcons and trade for Kirk Cousins and bring him back in that offense? I don't know, but I don't think you can allow J.J. McCarthy to flush your season down the drain.
Because they're good.
Come to that, but yeah. You can't allow that. They're too good everywhere else.
Yeah, that's why if that's the plan, then I go, respectfully, you can't have Carson Wentz be waiting on deck. I need someone a bit more stable.
I can't believe that's what they have right now.
Me neither.
They tried to bring in a guy they liked on paper in Sam Howell. He had a bad camp and a worse preseason, and they've moved on from him. They traded him. They've got this third-string quarterback who was one of the talks of their training camp. Max Brosmer is his name. He's a college free agent. And I think, didn't he? He was the 007 actor before Daniel Craig, wasn't he?
So a couple before. There were some medium reviews. I mean, GoldenEye was great, obviously. Spawned the video game in the whole series and the idea of concurrent, you know, first person.
He was also in Mrs. Doubtfire.
He was? He was in Mrs. Doubtfire?
Oh, yeah. He was the, the boyfriend interest of Sally
Field.
Oh,
right, Field,
right. Who Mrs. Doubtfire hits in the back of the head with an orange.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that Max Brosmer?
It could have been. Yeah. It could have been. What you sleep on is how good he was in the Thomas Crown Affair. That's where you slumber.
What you're right about is that I sleep on that.
You sleep on that.
But this Brosmer guy they really like, would they go to him? I don't know. But, yeah, McCarthy there just seems way, way, way too bullish on a benching. I could see the rest of them, though.
Yeah, the other ones make sense.
Before we get to October, Rattler's benched because the Saints look terrible. I get it. Flacco's going to get benched. I just don't think it'll be the first one.
I mean, he is a seat warmer at this point because they've got multiple young passers.
But if you're willing to go to Dylan Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders early in the season, why wouldn't you just start the year with them?
This is my lever pull theory for a Kevin Stefanski, where you're trying to dress up the turd. That's what you're doing. It's like you're trying to polish it and go, look, it's art. No, it's not. But it's a lever of excitement that you can pull. If you start off with the kid and then you got to go to Sam the Eagle, that's not going to look good.
Here's a pretty good one. The Jets, Justin Fields, sixth on this list. You know who the Jets backup is?
No.
Tyrod Taylor.
Is it really? Good for Tyrod Taylor.
Oh, I know. Tyrod Taylor is the guy that's always a little bit better than the crappy starter in front of him, kind of. He always ends up in that situation where somebody's giving someone a chance, and then he could come in and actually make your team a little bit better.
You want to settle things down a little bit. He's the rich man's Chase Daniel.
Michael Penix of the Falcons, listed eighth here at 9-1. I think there's a way better chance that Michael Penix is exceptional than that he gets benched. We just haven't seen a whole lot of him. But Atlanta feels like they can make the playoffs. Like, I think it's probably an 8-9 win team. But if you told me right now they go 11-6, that wouldn't surprise me. You know, they beat Tampa twice with Cousins playing through the injury last year. He was great in those games. But then they almost made the playoffs with a month of him not throwing a touchdown, throwing picks, hurt, and all that stuff. If you have Penix come out and play well with Bijan Robinson at running back, and they drafted two new starters now to come off the edge to fix their biggest problem for years, rushing the quarterback, I think they could actually be really good. But what if early in the season, Penix is not playing well, and you got Kirko Chains now healthy, standing there waiting, and Raheem Morris, a couple of years in, is starting to feel a little bit of heat. Winnable division. Let's say Tampa Bay's off to maybe a slow start as well, and you feel like, are we sure? I mean, they lose to the Bucs. They lose to the Vikings. In this hypothetical, they're 0-3 going into Washington, and Penix hasn't played well. Could you see that?
I suppose. I mean, just what's in my mind is how Cousins just didn't look like himself
at right.
pretty much the entirety of last
coming
year.
Coming off the Achilles and off the injury. Hurt shoulder. Yeah.
So you're going, is that who he is at this point? Or does he get better? Does he recover from that and kind of physically get back to it? Or is this just Michael Penix's time now and, you know, that kind of contract, all it is an albatross that they can't trade. So to me, because I'm a Penix fan, so I feel like he's going to play well, and you mentioned it. It's a pretty good situation there with London and Bijan Robinson and a pretty decent offense with a good cast of characters, and they, in theory, upgraded that pass rush, which was their Achilles heel. I like them, but I still think Tampa Bay's the class of that division, just in terms of personnel matching up. Although they beat Tampa twice last year.
Going back to the question is, if he starts slow, both of us don't think he'll be bad.
Right.
But if he's bad and they lose three or four games, do you think there's any kind of a groundswell? There clearly was the other way as soon as Cousins started to struggle.
Because you had a first-round pick in the top 10.
I don't think it'll be the other way because this is the first-round pick everybody
wanted to
see.
So you're right. I meandered around. I didn't answer the question. To me, like, I don't think there's going to be a groundswell for Cousins given what we saw last year.
I agree
locally,
with that.
You know what I mean?
I think they'll be extremely patient. And in fairness, I think Raheem was really, really patient with Cousins while he was struggling. They didn't go to the Penix until basically there was two or three games left in the season last year. Grant and Danny with you on the Fan. Who's going to be the best team in the NFL? We'll look at the highest projected win totals, see what makes sense and what doesn't. Also, aside from Jaden Daniels being exceptional, what do the Commanders have to do to reach their ceiling? It's coming up this hour on the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's finally NFL game week on the Fan. Tomorrow night, we will be watching week one football, Eagles, Cowboys in prime time. And in fact, the show's going to be on the road at the MGM National Harbor at Tap Sports Bar. And when we're done at 6:30, B. Mitch and Finley from Middays are going to be out there hanging out with listeners deep into the evening. So come on by and spend the day with 106.7 The Fan. As a reminder, our Friday field trip this week is actually going to be on a Monday after the game. We're going to be out in Leesburg. We will be at Pupatella Pizza in Leesburg on Monday. So if you want to hang with us, Thursday we're in Maryland, MGM National Harbor, and Monday we are at Pupatella in Leesburg. You should come to those events. Who's going to win the most games in the NFL this season? Highest win projections according to some of the DVOA numbers and their projections here. Buffalo Bills, Baltimore Ravens are the two teams at 12 wins via these numbers. At 11 wins, there are four clubs, including the Washington Commanders, which I love. DVOA, by the way, all in on the Commanders. The 11-win teams are the 49ers, the Chiefs, the Lions, and the Commanders. So in the case of Detroit, they've become a perennial power in the conference. Obviously, Washington last year, NFC Championship game berth. San Francisco's been a mainstay in the conference championship round and has made Super Bowl appearances. And the Kansas City Chiefs, is there a season
happening?
They're the
happening? Chiefs, yeah.
They're probably going to win the AFC West and have double-digit wins. So I get all those. But notice, I haven't said the Eagles yet.
That's the first thing that jumped out at your pal, Fanny Mouye, right?
Eagles, Rams, Packers, Broncos, a four-team tier at 10 projected wins. So I figured we could go one by one through these in a moment. But first, who do you think has the most wins? If one team stands alone with more victories than anybody else, who's it going to be?
I think it's the Bills. Probably the best team on paper, certainly in the AFC, right? They've got every
Better
ingredient.
Better than the Ravens?
I think so. I mean, wow. Let me rephrase. As good a team, and then maybe the better situation. I think that AFC North, teams will beat each other up. I mean, the offense of Cincinnati is elite. You know, Pittsburgh's going to win a game with like a block punt and another special team score and a pick six or something else weird. So I think just it ends up being tougher. And the Ravens, by the way, despite being historically good last year, outscoring teams by 157 points in every possible metric, and their simple rating system was the best in the NFL, they always have two or three inexplicable what the hell are you doing? How the hell did that happen? Losses, despite maybe having the highest ceiling in the whole sport. Buffalo, I think the division's weak. I don't trust Miami to do anything to get out of their own way. I think New England is the second best team in that division. That's a 7-8 win outfit to me. And I think the Jets will be jetting the entire year. So I think Buffalo has kind of a ready-made 5-1, 6-0 already in their bag.
So the reason I followed up with you and double-clicked on Buffalo is the common perception, the consensus right now is that the Ravens have the most talented team, certainly in the AFC and maybe in football overall. So when you said you thought Buffalo was more talented, I just thought that was interesting. But the reason I think the Bills is a great answer, Danny, strength of schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Ravens have the ninth hardest schedule in the NFL this year with a 5.33 win percentage. Opponents' combined record last year was 154 and 135. The schedule includes nine games against 2024 playoff teams. Whereas, if you look at the Bills, they are on the same metric that the Ravens are top 10 hardest schedule. They're all the way down at 23. You know, they have a bottom 10 schedule in terms of strength. I think the divisional thing that you brought up is the biggest reason why. Miami might be your stiffest competition, two games there. New England's going to be better, two games there. And then you've got a cupcake, theoretically, in the Jets. Now, sure, on the flip side, the Ravens have their own cupcake in the Browns, but we both think Cincinnati and Pittsburgh might be better than either other team in Buffalo's division. But if you look at the numbers, their schedule includes just six 2024 playoff team games, and 135 and 154, that's a 467 win percentage, well below 500. So I think the Bills is a great answer. I'm going to go off the board just a little bit here, and I'm going to say, why not the Green Bay Packers, who are projected to have 10 wins? A little bit of recency effect with Micah Parsons, but I think that the toughest projection to make is the NFC North is so good. It's really, really hard to go win 14, 15 games, you would think, when Detroit and Minnesota and Green Bay and Chicago are all going to be over 500. But then we saw it last year.
Yeah.
Detroit and Minnesota both were right there knocking on the door at the end of the year, 14 wins.
A combined 40 wins between three teams in one division. I can't remember that.
Basically, they beat everybody else but themselves.
Yeah, I can't remember anything like that. So that's my reason against Green Bay. I'm bullish on them. I think they're really, really good. I think the addition of Parsons is, you know, kind of that once-in-a-generation move that they make when they went and got Reggie White, when they went and got Charles Woodson. Now they did it again with Micah Parsons, kind of completes it. They never do that sort of stuff until they do. That's a really good team. That all hinges to me on Jordan Love doing what he did the second half of 2023, which he kind of didn't do last year. If he starts fast and sort of is able to finally put it all together and sustain it, that's as dangerous a team as there is in the NFL. They're really, really good.
Jordan Love might be the biggest X-factor player in the league this year. Not to say he hasn't been really good, but if he makes the leap that he's presumably capable of making into clear top 10, you know, fringe top 7 or so quarterback, plays at an MVP level for stretches this season, Green Bay could get to the Super Bowl. But they need him to do that.
Yep.
If not, you just kind of keep spinning your tires as a 10-11 win type team and maybe a wild card team that doesn't win the North. But yeah, on paper, I would say that a team like the Bills, because of their strength of schedule, 13 wins, the Ravens right around there makes some sense. What do you make of the 49ers as one of the four teams at 11?
I just don't buy it. I just don't. You look at their injury report. I mean, that's the story to me. Now, if you tell me Christian McCaffrey plays 16 out of 17 games, if you tell me that Brandon Ayuk comes back with no complications and the Q next to Juwan Jennings' name isn't a problem, and you go up and down the list and they get healthier, then I'm going, yeah, they win that division. They're in the NFC championship picture again. They're a team you don't want to play. And Kyle Shanahan's great. And Brock Purdy throws for 4,400 yards and 31 touchdowns. I just don't believe it. I mean, the gap between what it looks like to me on paper and where everybody, all the prognosticators have them, they were 6-11 last year, constantly banged up, old and hurt. Now they're going, yep, it's all going to be fine. 11 wins. Everyone's so bullish on them.
Ayuk's on PUP, by the way. He's going to miss a month.
Yeah.
They are the ultimate, nobody seems to care that their roster's not as good as it was team. When people talk about San Francisco, they talk about the stars and the scrubs approach, essentially, on offense, where, yeah, they still have Kyle Juszczyk, who might be the best fullback. They still have George Kittle, who might be the best tight end. They still have Trent Williams, who might be the best left tackle. They still have Brock Purdy, who's a very good, solid starting quarterback. They still have Christian McCaffrey, who might be the best running back. And maybe that's the whole argument. But does nobody care that this receiver room is in shambles? Ricky Pearsall was a first-round pick out of Florida. Maybe that's where we're missing the boat. Maybe people already know that Pearsall's a dog and he's going to be great, and you and I haven't seen it. Juwan Jennings, who's a former seventh-round pick a handful of years ago and has been a third-down war daddy for them. Maybe that's the idea. You know, he had a 3-touchdown game last year, and he's just going to go make 80 catches and go for 1,000 yards and help replace Debo. Do you realize, though, they elevated Marquez Valdes-Scantling from their practice squad today, who they just brought in this week. And he's already a starter,
mm-hmm,
an 11 personnel. Like, he's going to be on the field for them. So I just have a hard time. I know it's Kyle Shanahan. I know he gets guys open. I get that he made Jabbar Gaffney a 1,000-yard guy in D.C. in this offense. But I need a little bit more than a banged-up Juwan Jennings. I'm not even sure if he's going to play or will be 100%. And Ricky Pearsall, who was a rookie last year, got off to a slow start after tragically being shot. And then Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who bounces all over the place and is a nomad. There seems to be a lot of confidence in San Francisco's defense because they are going to be better coached. They're getting Robert Saleh back as their defensive coordinator. So maybe that'll be a big boost. But they lost talent. They have two new starters that came in from...
And they drafted heavy on defense, too. I mean, that was their thought.
But they have two rookies, basically, that they're counting on in the back end.
Yeah, I don't see... I think they had among the highest over-under win totals in the NFL. And that's counting on a couple things to me. The one, the Rams not being anywhere near as good as I think they can be. That's Matt Stafford health dependent. The fact that the Cardinals are not terrible. This is everyone just goes Cardinals and they roll their eyes. They had a positive point differential last year. They were middle of the pack in both offense and defense. I'm not telling you that that's a 15-win juggernaut that's going to beat the brakes off of people. But I'm also telling you they're not the Cleveland Browns. They're not down at their bottom.
You don't just get to sweep them because you play them twice.
Right. They're a mild friskiness. And you had in Seattle that just, I don't think has a terribly high ceiling, but they won 10 games last year. I just don't see the cakewalk for San Francisco to march to 11, 12, 13 wins. But that's where the betting industry seems to be. Now, I don't have enough confidence to wager on it because it's one of those things where I feel like I'm taking crazy pills, Mugatu style from Zoolander. But just weird to me, man, that everybody seems so bullish on San Fran.
I think it's just schedule. I don't think there's anything more to it than that. I think the fact that they play seven games against teams that picked in the top 10 last year, the worst teams in football.
That certainly helps.
I think that the assumption is they'll go 5-2, 6-1 in those games. If you split everything else, you end up being 10-11 win range. But that is the highest win projections according to DVOA. Washington was in that conversation. Let's get into the Commanders next. Other than Jaden Daniels, what do they have to do to hit that ceiling and to be in the conversation as the best team in the NFC? This is The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Grant and Danny on The Fan. We were just going through some of the highest win projections via DVOA in the NFL. Bills and Ravens, both out of the AFC at 12 wins. Tops in the NFC, 49ers, Lions, Commanders, all sitting at 11 projected wins. So the question is, other than just Jaden Daniels being awesome and replicating last year and playing at an MVP level, how does Washington hit its ceiling? And what separates a likely season, 9, 10 wins, whatever that is, from the ceiling, the best-case scenario, this 11-12-win hypothetical where they're actually competing for the one seed and, God willing, a bye. Can you believe that? And a number one NFC slate in the postseason on their way to the Super Bowl.
Boring, annoying answer, health, so get that one out of the way. That's obvious,
I'll
right?
put that in the Jaden Daniels category of, like, not controllable and obvious.
Sure, okay. So from there, to me, the biggest thing is the plan works. And here's what I mean. They focused on two things this offseason. One, a reshuffling and addition to the offensive line. That is, Laremy Tunsil is the guy that they certainly think he is, that Brandon Coleman takes to the guard position like a duck to water, that Sam Cosby comes back and is himself at guard or, some combination of Wiley, Allegretti, et cetera, with an athletic Josh Connerly at right tackle, is the massive upgrade that they clearly spent all of their resources on. The offensive line is good. It allows you to call everything at any time. Not one of those, well, we got to leave John Bates in to help chip somebody, and we can only run max protect on certain downs. You can run the whole thing, and defense are terrified of you. Flip side, on defense, their plan, whether you would have done this or not, this is what they did. We are beefing up against the run. That's the way to unlock a better pass defense, certainly a better run defense. We'll be better on third and seven because we put you in third and seven with this hockey style shifts, guys coming in and out of the game for different sub packages to rush the passer. If their plan works on the lines, we can talk about something special.
So I'll even isolate it for me to the defensive line because I have a lot of confidence in their O-line being very good as the year goes on. I am more curious. While I am optimistic about the defensive front, I've seen Daron Payne play at an elite level. I know he can do it. Does he still have that club in the bag? I'm looking forward to finding that out. Javon Kinlaw is a guy that's going to have four hands on him a bunch, right? There's going to be double teams. He's going to attract attention. He's just the largest man who's ever lived. What does that do for Payne getting up the field and possibly pushing the pocket and collapsing the interior? What does that do for Jajan Johnny Newton, the second-round pick last year? Someone's got to step forward and help rush the quarterback from the inside. I don't think that's Kinlaw. I think they're bringing Kinlaw in essentially to free somebody else up at that D-tackle position as a pass rusher. But the edge might be more important. You know, I always now start with D-tackle because I think the best way to bother a quarterback is to force them off their mark and get them moving. It used to be you need the edge rusher because they'll get the sacks. Well, now I just step up in a pocket that's fairly clean and escape like a surfer through a wave, and I'm fine. So really, I start with it's the old thing of how you bothered Tom Brady. You get guys' bodies falling around his feet. I start at D-tackle. But is Dorrance Armstrong, Von Miller as a closer, Jacob Martin, who intrigues me, at the former Bear, Dietrich Wise was more of a run stuffer. You know, that edge position, if you end up using Javonte Jean-Baptiste, can you get enough from those guys as pass rushers so that you don't ultimately need to make Frankie Louvu basically an edge defender a ton? The more often he's doing that, now I'm missing things at the second level with speed. I need Frankie Louvu just roaming and being an assassin at linebacker as often as possible. We all know Louvu's their best pass rusher from a skill standpoint. You want to mix and match that, but you want him coming downhill. You want basically him as a blitzer. I think he's incredible at it. So can they get enough from what is their base edge rush group that Louvu doesn't have to become a de facto pass rusher for them? If they can do that and they've got enough pass rush with an improved secondary, with better corner play, playing man coverage, I kind of think this defense is actually going to be significantly better. And if that's the case and you're still really good on offense, I just found you 11 wins and a ticket to the postseason looking pretty. But you got to be able to get to the quarterback. It's the most important thing. The back end's going to help, Danny, because they're going to cover better.
That's the idea.
But if you can't win one-on-one up front in this league, it just makes it really hard.
Yeah, I mean, you can get so creative, and we saw it with Greg Williams when they didn't have much of the pass rush, that Sean Springs was their leading sacker, blitzing off the corner spot a couple times. He got 6.5 sacks and led the team at one point.
On a pretty good defense.
On a pretty good defense. So, yeah, you can get creative, but we've seen the modern paradigm with how good these quarterbacks are with the rules to protect them. The way to knock Pat Mahomes out is not to blitz, is not to bring extra pressure. It is to cover with as many people as possible for as long as possible so he gets impatient. Good luck with that, right? So, yeah, I mean, the teams that have kind of gone from not that much to Super Bowl contender, think of those dumb Giants teams with goofy Eli Manning getting hot in the second half of seasons, or the Carolina Panthers team with Cam Newton as an MVP candidate. It was the front four just beating the hell out of people, just causing havoc on every play, getting you into second and long, third and long every time so they could go eat in terms of a pass rush. If you can do that, again, I don't think they've got your Trey Hendricksons or your Micah Parsons is there. What I do think they're going to do is shuffle guys in and out and say, you give me a max effort, you know, 5, 6, 7 plays, and then the next guy will come in to try to do, you know, some of the same thing. I think you're going to see a little bit more of that for them, and maybe that's the idea. That's why they kept de facto 11 guys when you consider Von Miller a defensive lineman, which I do.
We got an update on what's going on with Kendrick Bourne, the wide receiver who worked out for the Commanders on Tuesday. We're going to pass that along next. Plus, got an audio vault for you as well. It's a short Grant and Danny, but We are with you until 6:30. Means we get a juicy, long final segment. No Nats baseball to get to because they've already beat up on and swept the Marlins in Game 3 of a series today right here on The Fan. G&D, coming back next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.